You're listening to the Docs and More podcast with Lovejeet Dhaliwal. This week, I'm joined by one of the co-directors of the incredible documentary, The New Corporation, the unfortunately necessary sequel. Described by Forbes magazine as the must-see documentary of the year, the film charts how our democracies are in danger thanks to the rise of corporations. Connecting stories from around the world, the film examines economic inequality, racial injustice, climate change, and much, much more. One half of this impressive directing duo is the award-winning director Jennifer Abbott, and the other is a professor of law at the University of British Columbia, a writer and also a filmmaker, Joel Bacan. Welcome to the Docs and More podcast, Joel.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me, first of all, how did the film come about?
Yeah, I mean, it came about partly because I was frustrated that the first film that we made, which this is a sequel to, The Corporation, which came out in 2003, clearly hadn't done its job. I mean, we looked at corporations, we looked at their power, we looked at the harm and the danger of their growing power. The film came out, and then 10 years later, we were sort of celebrating its 10-year anniversary, and I thought to myself, well, there really isn't much to celebrate. Everything we looked at the film, in the film, economic injustice, climate change, pollution, all of it had gotten worse. Corporations had gotten bigger and more powerful. And now they were actually presenting themselves as solutions to the world's problems, much more than when we made the first film. And there'd been this real shift where, oh, we're sustainable now, we're going to help solve the world's problems. And so I thought when I was sitting there, we really need to do a sequel.
When you talk about the corporations that kind of changed their positions or shifted their positions, are you talking more about their the corporate social responsibility end, which many of us see as a very benign and perhaps a good force?
Well, and I think that's exactly our entry point in this project. And both the book and the film are titled The New Corporation. And the idea is that corporations have kind of recreated themselves, or at least recreated their image. And the point that we make in both the book and film is that it really is only an image shift. It's true that corporations now talk a good talk, and sometimes they walk a better walk than they used to. But for the most part, profit, growth, return to shareholders remain their primary imperatives and their primary goals. And as a result of that, there's a large gap between this kind of new image of them as being benevolent and the reality of what they do. And more than that, I think the real point of this project isn't just that they're kind of deceiving us as to how good they are, but that they're leveraging that deception to gain even more power, to present themselves as benevolent and therefore now capable of doing the kinds of things that government should be doing, that democratic government should be doing, like running schools, like running water systems. So there's a really problematic side to this way that they've seduced us into seeing them as a benevolent force.
Donald Trump had been elected or just been elected. Did that also make a difference to your decision to making a sequel?
You know, it's really interesting because I decided to make the sequel before Donald Trump was elected. A lot of these trends were evident well before that. I mean, while Obama was president in the United States and there were, you know, allegedly progressive governments in other places, but it didn't seem to matter. What I was sort of realizing when I started to make this project, it didn't seem to matter, you know, whether the socialists in Spain were in power or Obama was in power in the United States. These sort of what many call neoliberal trends, this idea that markets should be expanded, that public provision should be diminished, that deregulation and privatization were good things, these trends seem to be happening regardless of what stripe of government was in power. And so I really did decide to make this prior to Donald Trump getting elected. When Donald Trump got elected, I really saw it, and we presented in the film and book as symptomatic what had been going on for decades beforehand, rather than causal of those kinds of things.
In your film, you show how democratic governments are kind of being pushed to one side. Corporations are taking over. One example of this is you're at Davos and you see the political leaders there and they're busy rubbing shoulders with business CEOs and who are running multi-dollar corporations around the world. Isn't it useful to have multinationals working with governments? Shouldn't they be meeting?
I think the difficulty is not that governments and multinationals are meeting, but it's rather the idea that is articulated by Klaus Schwab, the head of the Davos gathering and the head of the World Economic Forum that meets at Davos, and others. And that is the notion that governments and multinational companies are now partners. That is not an idea that sits well with democratic principles. Governments are supposed to be sovereign, not only over citizens, but over economic entities. And the idea that they would be sovereign over citizens, but partners, equals with corporations, is anathema to sort of any theory of democracy that's worth its salt. And I think that therein lies the fundamental problem here, is that corporations see themselves and are seen by governments often as being equals, as being partners in governing society. And increasingly, governments are becoming the junior partners. And I think that is really where the problems lie.
So, are you saying then that governments are mistaking the corporation's intention?
I think that a lot of people and government, citizens, organizations, NGOs, the United Nations are mistaking corporations' intentions. I come at this as a legal scholar. I'm interested in how the corporation is put together legally. And when you look at how it's put together legally, it is effectively required always to make decisions in its own best interest. So it is a institutionally and legally self-interested institution. And so to the extent that we grant corporations more power to govern us, we're granting institutions power over us that have no responsibility towards us. And it's true that sometimes the interests of creating wealth for shareholders and the interests of society align. A company that's producing green energy, for example, can create profit for shareholders and also do good for the environment. But it's also the case that in many, many, many instances, many more than you would think, given the nice propaganda that corporations put out about social responsibility, in many instances, those diverge. And corporations are incentivized in order to perform their legally required mission of creating wealth for shareholders. They're incentivized to cause harm to the environment, to society, to individuals. And that's effectively what we document in the film and in the book.
When you talk about how corporates actually impact governments and how they affect them, can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, there are many ways that corporations affect or influence government. And, you know, the most obvious ones that we hear a lot about, particularly in the United States, are how corporations fund candidates for elections, how corporations lobby. But there are other things going on as well. There are corporations being involved as equals in United Nations food programs and as allies and partners with various NGOs like the World Wildlife Fund. So they've kind of got their tentacles in all of these places that affect our democratic discourse, that affect our democratic decision-making, that affect what kind of policies we end up with. And they also have a lot of power to affect governments by and affect government decisions by saying, in effect, if you don't regulate or if you don't deregulate us or if you don't do what's good for us, we're going to leave. We're not going to invest in your country or we're not going to invest in your city. So the fact that they have the size that they have, that they can have such impact on the economic fortunes of a particular jurisdiction gives them a great deal of leverage and really forces the question or begs the question as to why have we allowed them to develop that kind of power, which they quite legitimately, in terms of their own mandates to serve their shareholders' interests, exercise in order to make it easier for them to make profit, which means, you know, deregulating, which means trying to get their hands on things that have been provided by government in the past through privatization. I mean, these are things that you would logically expect an institution created as the corporation is to do.
Is it a case then that the corporations, they have actually just got too big?
I think, you know, it's a complicated mess. Let's face it, business is important. Business creates things, provides things, creates jobs. In a market economy, we need a market and we need businesses to operate within it.
And it creates wealth, you know, and the government needs that for its people.
And it creates wealth. So if we have a capitalist or market economy, then there's going to be a private sector and there's going to be business. The question then is, how do we organize that business in ways that serve the social good? And the argument in the film and book is that the corporate form is a particularly, potentially dangerous way to do that. It's not necessarily dangerous, but if we give entities organized as corporations and legally certified as corporations free rein, they are going to use that in ways that serve their interests. They're going to try to grow without limit, as we've seen, for example, big tech companies. They're going to exploit without limit. That is what they're designed to do. So I often use the analogy, it's like a lawnmower. You know, a lawnmower is a very useful tool to cut your lawn, keep it looking nice, but you don't want to use it, for example, to give yourself a haircut or to make your smoothie in the morning. It has certain uses, and you need to regulate it. You know, you need to make sure that it doesn't go and cut other people's lawns and get out of control and make too much noise and make too much pollution. So a corporation is similar. It's a tool. And it was created as a tool to finance industry. And it's a quite powerful tool for doing that. But it's also a tool that needs to be understood as a tool, as limited to certain things and as potentially dangerous. And I think we've lost sight of that in our society. And that this movement by corporations to say they're benevolent now is exacerbating the problem, because it's leading us to believe that they're not just those tools anymore, but now they can actually take a part in governing society. And I think that's where we're potentially going off the cliff.
What I really enjoyed about watching this film is that there is absolutely so much in here. And I've got to congratulate you. I don't know how you managed to pull all the strands together, because there is so much going on. And it really does make you sit back and think. But you have like areas in there talking about private education, talking about the environment and climate change and how that's being affected. How on earth did you decide which stories to look at and which stories to include? And were there any stories that you felt that you wish you had included, but you just didn't have room for in the film?
This documentary, I think, is unique, similar to the first documentary, in that it's driven by an argument. I mean, I'm primarily a lawyer, a legal academic, and this is a prosecution of the corporation. And when you are prosecuting a case as a lawyer, you go for the best evidence that will support your story within the confines of, you can't cherry pick. I mean, you have to have integrity, but you're trying to mount a case, and a credible and a persuasive case, with evidence, with stories. But it starts with an analysis, and this film starts with an analysis.
Joel, in the film, you have the example of private education and how it works in developing countries. Can you tell us a little bit more about why we need to be wary about the private sector moving into education?
Yeah, we tell the story in the film and in the book about Bridge Academies International. And it's a company that is funded in part by Bill Gates, also the Zuckerberg Chan Foundation, other philanthropic capitalists, as they're called. And we're telling the story in part because we want to take a look at the idea of billionaire benevolence. And I'm thinking here of Bill Gates in particular. And so we look at Bill Gates as one of the kind of ground floor people in this idea of the new corporation. He has a notion that he describes as creative capitalism. And as we see in the film, he describes that notion as one that sees corporations playing a much greater role in solving the problems of the world, including lack of education for many people in the global south. And so he funds this company, or he helps fund this company, Bridge, which basically delivers schools on a for-profit basis in poor countries at low fees. And I think the fundamental point we're trying to make in looking at that story is that public education is really within our sort of notions of what democracy should be. Public education is something that should be an entitlement of all children, that should be public in its orientation, that should be high quality. And our concern is that when you put it in the hands of for-profit corporations delivering it for profit, you run the risk of having a situation where many kids can't afford it. But more than that, you run the risk of having its delivery be designed in a way that's more oriented to profit than good education values. And the point we make about Bridge is their system of delivering education is basically to have teachers read word for word from a tablet that delivers lesson plans. And so we sort of are asking, is that really a good way to be teaching? Does that really serve the values of what education should be? To have a for-profit company designing a curriculum and then hiring teachers to literally read it word for word, not to compose their own lesson plans, but almost in a robotic way to just read it word for word to the student. But the real question is, do we want to aspire to an ideal of education that says for-profit companies should be delivering it on a for-profit basis, but perhaps are not realizing the real potential of what schooling should offer? And people will say, well, isn't that better than nothing? And I think our argument is we really need to think about that, because aren't we capable of more? Perhaps we should be thinking of providing aid to countries that can't afford to provide a good public education system, aid that will enable them to provide a good public education system for all children, rather than simply giving up on the project of public education and saying, let's just leave it to for-profit companies to do.
I'm sure many of us would be wondering, once we hear that example, many of us would be wondering, well, how on earth was the government persuaded to stop providing education?
When you're looking at post-colonial countries, you're looking at systems that have sort of gotten their start in poverty with all of the vicissitudes of struggle and poverty, whether you're in Africa, whether you're in parts of India. You're looking at parts of the world that were really ravaged by the colonial powers. Then you have a kind of new colonialism, the big corporations based in the global north, seeing the global south as a potential for extraction of profit, whether it's through agriculture or through schooling or through running water systems or whatever. And so there's a lot of pressure and there aren't a lot of resources. And in the past, we've tried to address this through various kinds of aid to governments to try to promote democracy, to try to promote strong public infrastructures, to try to do all of that. In the present, we're leaving that job more to corporations. And there's really, I think, something to be said for returning to the ideal of a more equitable and more public kind of aid notion, a kind of recompense for the vast amounts of capital that were extracted by global North countries through colonial processes, and thinking about how to do that better, rather than leaving it to Bill Gates and his billionaire friends to try to, you know, allegedly save the global South.
Now, in the film, you also cover the rise in movements like Black Lives Matter or Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Future, and there's a few, many others that you touch on as well. Are these movements a reaction to corporate power or government failure, or both?
Well, I think they're a reaction to both and the intersection thereof. The strange thing about the world we're living in now is that everybody's saying, oh, you know, governments are failing, they're not providing the services they should be and whatnot. Well, that's not happenstance. For 40 years, big business has been pursuing a campaign. And I mean, this isn't a conspiracy theory. You just need to look at the records, the facts of what big business has been lobbying for. They've been lobbying to push government into retreat. They've been lobbying to have their taxes cut so that governments are starved of revenue. And then when governments are starved of revenue and they can't provide proper schooling, they've been lobbying to take over those schools and run them on a for-profit basis. They've been lobbying for deregulation of the environment, of social systems, of utilities. You know, they've been lobbying for things that make profit-making easier, at the same time saying, and, you know, wow, look, governments are now in retreat. Oh, that's too bad. Well, you know, we can take over now. So, you know, we have people in the film. We have, for example, Richard Edelman, one of the world's leading business gurus. And, you know, corporations are good now. They're good actors. They're benevolent. And so they can fill the voids that have been left by retreating governments. That's how he describes it. And so I think what people in the streets are rallying against and protesting is that nexus between corporate influence and government failure, whether it's the environmental front or it's on the social front. You know, a large part, as we show in the film, of the Black Lives Matter protests were about the fact that government was not providing the kinds of social services that it should provide. The whole defund the police campaign was not just about defunding the police. It was about the reorienting the priorities of governments. It was about refunding social services, refunding housing, refunding education, and thereby dealing with the growing disparities and racial divides in the United States and other countries. As one of the people in the film describes it, sort of destroying the system and then coming in as a sort of knight in shining armor saying, we're going to save it. That relationship between corporates and government that have led us to where we are.
When we take in all of that, where does this leave us? I mean, what does a healthy partnership between a democracy and corporates look like?
Well, I think that the way that we have to think about markets, capitalism, corporations, is that they are means for serving the end of social good. So I'm not averse to a market system. We don't propose in the film to get rid of the corporation. We don't propose to get rid of markets. But we have to go back to what I was talking about earlier, we have to see them as tools for serving social good. We view the economy as a living and breathing thing that we have to feed. And that's where the problem is. My first plea would be, let's think about it in those terms. And let's see where that takes us. Can't sort of come up with a five-year plan of exactly how that would all roll out. But we currently have things quite upside down. And the purpose of the book and film is to try to make that point. And the activists and the political people that we see at the end, none of them are saying destroy the market system. You know, none of them are saying get rid of corporations altogether. What they tend to be asking for is a balance and a democratic oversight that that we've lost, especially over the last 40 years.
Which democracies would you say are the greatest in danger?
You know, if you had asked me that a couple of months ago, I would have said the United States. I mean, I think all democracies are always in danger because I think democracy is a concept that if you take it for granted, it disappears. And I think to some extent that's been happening. I think the election, Donald Trump, and the way that Donald Trump behaved in office and the policies that he pursued and the connections with big business that he fostered, all of that, I think, demonstrates just how fragile democracy is. A lot of people, you know, were surprised at just how quickly things seem to unravel. But as I argue in the book, and as we hint at in the film, if you have a society where the gap between rich and poor has become so profound, has become a chasm, the middle class has dropped out, where all of that economic equality, inequality is intersecting with racial inequality. If you have that kind of society of incredible division, of people feeling left behind, left out, excluded, you're going to have a situation that breeds a Donald Trump. You need only look at, you know, recent history of the last 100 years, the rise of fascism in Europe, for example, to see that when you neglect some kind of ethos of egalitarianism in a society, bad things happen. People become angry, they become fearful, and anger and fear never lead to good outcomes. And so, you know, the argument I make explicitly in the book, and as I say, we hint at it in the film, is that I don't think you can have democracy that isn't what we commonly call social democracy. I don't think you can have political democracy sitting on top of vast social inequality, profound social inequality. I think there has to be a measure of social equality in a society, a very robust social safety net, provision for people who end up out of work, who are disabled, programs to ensure true racial equality, and that immigrants are repressed and oppressed. I mean, all of that needs to be in place for political democracy to work. And so what I would say is that any political democracy where social inequality has reached profound proportion is in danger. And I would say that's probably every political democracy today.
Joel Bakan, that's been fascinating. Thank you very much for coming on to the Docs and More podcast.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you inviting me.
You've been listening to the Docs and More podcast with Lovejeet Dhaliwal. If you enjoy the show, review and subscribe to the series.